Before I begin my remarks, I realized something that I wanted to mention during announcements, but, I forgot. And that is, we had talked about putting together a book discussion group starting this coming Thursday, February 2nd. And the book that we're going to be using is called Breakfast Epiphanies. And it's around finding wonder in the everyday world. And the person's name, he's a minister now in Connecticut, named David Anderson, no relation to the one we have here. But I decided to move it back a week until February 9th because, oddly enough, people don't read their emails or the B&B or whatever. And so people were surprised that you need to contact Jody at the office and let her know you're on the list to be able to take the book discussion group. It will be February 9th, 7:15 p.m. in the Arthur Room across the way after the meditation group. If anyone has any questions, please check in with me and I'll try to answer them. Thank you. Announcements aside, again, Mary Lynn, thank you for being here today. It's lovely to see you again. And all of you, thank you for being out here in this rainy day. The thirst for wholeness. I've always been very intrigued by that title because it's based on a book by Christina Groff, who died a number of years ago, and I'm going to mention her a bit later on. And this idea of wholeness has a lot of different meanings. Where I was trained at a Zen monastery is that wholeness or completeness or fullness happens in stages. It just doesn't happen, all right, I'm whole, I'm complete, between one moment and the next, although it does happen. So I'm going to talk about wholeness, but in the context of the things we have to deal with in life involving sometimes addiction, but sometimes using tools. And that's going to be the theme. Carl Jung, who exchanged information with Bill Wilson, who was the co-founder of AA in the early 1960s before they both died, actually. And in his correspondence with Bill Wilson, he said, "The craving for alcohol was the equivalent on a low level of the spiritual thirst for a being with wholeness, expressed in medieval language as the union with God." And that's what Christina Groff then did in the title of her book, Thirst for Wholeness, and talking about wholeness and what it means, not just for us as human beings, but for those of us like myself who are in recovery from addictions of various sorts. She explored her journey from addiction to alcohol to find that hole in the heart or the soul that was a search for wholeness, completion, balance, serenity, equanimity. She wrote that wholeness involved being connected to other people, communication and compassion for self and others, not one or the other, and being able to balance all of the apparent contradictions in our lives, the paradoxes that we seem to have to live with, which can be confusing at times. So this morning, I'm not going to talk about addiction to alcohol or addictions to substances or behaviors. I do want to briefly discuss the current anxiety about information overload with all the media we use online, thanks to our smartphones, our computers, our tablets, whatever means we have to be able to connect to the larger world. There was an article in Slate magazine back in 2010 around the concerns about there's too much information coming in, what are we going to do about it because it's dangerous? And I'm not going to quote totally from it, but I'm going to use some of the language that this quote uses because it was a really wonderful article. So this is how it started. Excuse me. A respected Swiss scientist, Conrad Giesner, might have been the first to raise the alarm about the effects of information overload. In a landmark book, he described how the modern world overwhelmed people with information so that it was going to drive everybody beyond the pale. And the media now, at least in the last 20 years, has echoed his concerns with reports about unprecedented risks of living always in what we would call a digital environment. There's just so much stuff to take in. Now, this person, Gessner, is a very interesting character. It should be noted that he never once used email. He had no idea about computers and could care less, even if he had. And that's not because he was a technophobe. He died in 1565. And he was an abbot at a monastery where their main focus, other than prayer, was scribing books, writing books, putting books together by hand with all kinds of little pictures. And you've probably seen the medieval texts that were written and scribed, and they have on the sides, on the insides, all these little doodles. And they also have cat paws, by the way. And they're kind of wonderful, but he was very distressed that a source of their business, for one thing, was going to go away because of the printing press. And the printing press, as he surmised, totally changed the world. The flood of information unleashed by being able to print books in volume and as many as needed was astonishing to people of that time. It was also a danger to the church, by the way. And what was said in this article was that every time a new communications and connections era begins, a telegraph, telephone, and so on, there's usually a reactive, tremendous worry in the older generation about its harmful effects on the younger generations. For example, the radio. Adults discovered yet another scourge of the young. The wireless was accused of distracting children from reading and diminishing performance in school. And there was a magazine common in the 30s, and I never heard of it. In 1936, it was a music magazine called Gramophone. And they reported that, quote, children had developed the habit of dividing attention between their school assignments and the compelling excitement of the loudspeaker, and then described how the radio programs were disturbing the balance of their very excitable teenage minds. It doesn't end there. Then came television. And some of us in this room remember when it was black and white, it was maybe three or four channels total. And the media historian Ellen Wattella has said how opponents of TV voiced concerns about how television might hurt radio, conversation, reading, and the patterns of family living. And it was going to result in the further vulgarization of American culture. That was their opinion about TV. Then comes computers. By the end of the 20th century, personal computers had entered our homes and our offices, and the internet was a global phenomenon. It really became popular and mainstream in about 1999. And there were terrible worries about how this particular mode of transportation, of communication, was going to affect people. For example, CNN reported that, quote, email hurts IQ more than pot. The Telegraph in England said, with headlines, Twitter and Facebook could harm moral values. Okay? And also, Facebook and the MySpace generation cannot form relationships. That was another anxiety. And then the Daily Mail, which is also in England, ran a piece with the headline, How Using Facebook Could Raise Your Risk of Cancer. So you see and you hear that there was a lot of worry about this, primarily directed to people of the younger generations who clearly were at risk because they were bound to use the new technology and new communications. Now, not a single shred of evidence indicates that Facebook causes cancer or email hurts IQ more than pot, et cetera, et cetera. But they made headlines because they were anxiety. They were worry that the new form of communication was going to be not only incomprehensible, but was going to harm everybody's morals. And we can't have that. But it was a recurrent fear about technology, going back all the way to the printing press until now. So how do these tools of communication, printing press all the way to computers and the internet, how do they connect to wholeness? Well, first of all, each of these advances in communication extended the connection of relationships near and far. The printing press ushered in a new world of reading and imagination and not being told by the church, whatever church it might be, that this is the way you must think, this is how you must feel, and you don't need to read anything because we know all the answers. That was no longer a valid issue. The telephone became a two-way conversation between people at a distance. And for those of us who may remember party lines, it was also a way for other people to hear our conversations and maybe comment as we didn't know they were there. But the telephone ushered in a way of being able to reach out in a two-way process rather than just, say, reading or other media. TV added a visual dimension so that we could watch fictional and factual events and be able to see them with our eyes. And again, going back to the sorrow I mentioned, imagine for those of us going back to black and white TV, I know that makes us ancient, of watching black people being beaten when they were protesting during the civil rights era. Those images have never quite left me, and I still remember them with great pain. Computers, tablets, and smartphones gave people the ability to go beyond a one-way or passive connection with other people. So consider what happened in the last week or so, the ugly and graphic videos of this young black man, Tyre Nichols, being beaten and later dying because of out-of-control law enforcement. People now have the means of organizing and protesting almost immediately, instantly. We have seen and heard pictures of videos of too many deaths of innocents, including school children, and people on a dance floor. It's right in front of us, and it's overwhelming, yes, but it is real. And it's something that, as we move along, we're having to respond to, either by total denial, I don't see anything, or we need to together help us go beyond this. In the old days, pick what you will, these kinds of tragedies, whether what happened in Tennessee or happened with the school shootings and so on, they would have been covered up or sanitized by TV or radio or newspapers so that really the people viewing it wouldn't see so much graphic evidence. In the old days, I would not have been able to check online to make sure that I got Tyre Nichols' name correctly spelled and pronounced, because I always have anxiety about pronouncing names. Last night, when I was doing the final draft of this, I looked online, there was a pronunciation, easy. Remember 9/11? Remember January 6th, 2021? We experienced those tragedies in real time. There wasn't a delay of being written in a newspaper and us seeing it the next morning, or not having any means of the communication except to hear word of mouth or by telegraph or some other slower media. It was right there, right in front of us. We could not turn away. Yes, we could. We could turn off the TV. But it's important as citizens of a country to see this and be reminded of this is what it's all about. This is the fear we need to face. And then, need I say about the war between Russia and Ukraine? That is the largest European land war since World War II. And every time I see remote drones, firing missiles at a group of Russians, usually, because the Ukrainians put these out, I think, all those people dying. What a shame, how unjust that young men and young women and older people and infants, because of the desire to recreate an empire, people are dying because we're seeing it right there. It's not fun, it's not enjoyable, but it is right now real and we are responding to it. Are the events that we see and hear online all terrible? No, and that's the thing I want to really focus on, because the anxiety is that the internet and all the media is making us crazy, which it possibly could be, but it's not all bad. And we tend to think this is bad, so it all must be bad. Imagine this. Imagine having a really bad and depressing day 40 years ago. Perhaps a friend or relative was seriously ill far away, and you'd heard about it in a phone call. Now, you might have wanted, of course, to reach out and try to find the person to help or other family members or friends. So the primary option was call them on the phone. Before answering machines and voicemail, though, if you didn't get an answer, you had to keep on trying until hopefully someone picked up the phone. You had other options. Imagine writing a letter, putting it in an envelope, stamping it, and putting it in the mail. Hopefully, that letter would go to whomever you were contacting, maybe a day, maybe 2 days, maybe longer. But it was a slow and sometimes inefficient way of communicating with others during a time of crisis. Now, we know, of course, and it can't be forgotten, that using social media on the internet and so on has its downsides. Meanness, trolling, spam, and we can all remember princes in Nigeria offering you $1 million or something like that, and many other instances of ugly videos, pictures, and opinions are beyond hurtful. There's no question. Still, it's always a mixed bag. It isn't one, oh, this is the most glorious tool for communications ever, or this is the most awful tool of communications ever, because it's going to rot everybody's brains. The new mode of communication, like the internet and social media, gives each one of us nearly immediate and mutual support. Here's an example from my own life. And yes, it involves cats. Last year in April, the last of my two elderly cats who'd been with me for 17 years died of old age. And she was at my house, and so I kept her with me until she died. I knew it was going to happen because her sister had died about a year before. But nothing prepared me for the emotional intensity of those moments, that 2 or 3 hours between the time I found her on the floor and then she died beside me. It was hard. I knew it was going to happen, but it didn't quite prepare me for the reality. Well, the first person I contacted was Deborah. We texted on the phone, and we shared how we felt about it. But I also knew that I was going to need more than Deborah. You don't have to tell her that, by the way. And so I reached out to a group page on Facebook called Clergy with Cats. and shared my grief and just how sad it was for me. And there were several thousand clergy on that particular group page from all over the world, some who are Christian, various types, Jewish, Islamic, Shinto, Buddhist, and none of the above. Within minutes and hours, I had messages of support and kindness from people all over the world who were in this group. It made a very difficult day a little bit better because I knew there were people who would care like myself and would give me the support just as I have given it to them in subsequent times. Because what we all tend to talk about as clergy with cats is A, how cute the videos are, and B, how sad it is when we lose them. And that to me was an expression of the deepening understanding of wholeness. 100 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to reach out for support. 50 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that. But now, despite all the complaints and real issues with social media on the internet, I was able to reach out and I got emotional, spiritual, and moral support. And most of these people I will never meet, ever. But I also try to do the same for them, of giving support, saying, whatever I can do, I'll be helpful, and so on. It happens for me also when I have video meetings with retired ministry colleagues, usually saying, what is retirement about? Because I have no idea. Or when we're trying to help each other through difficult times. And you can remember, since COVID started, we've now learned how to use Zoom and the other video media online. It's made lives a lot easier. Another example is I have relatives in North Carolina who are going through a very difficult time around jobs and where they're living. So I said, I will give you some financial assistance right now because they're on PayPal. And so I was able to transfer some money to them within 5 minutes. I would not have been able to do that 50 years ago. I might have been able to wire money to them, but that would have involved a lot more steps. So a thirst for wholeness means sharing love and compassion with others, regardless of distance, regardless whether you know them well or not, and regardless of the circumstances. And I'll give you quickly one more example that I saw this morning online, of course. There was a dog found, it was in Tennessee, and a dog was wandering the streets and got picked up and taken to a rescue center. And there was a collar, and on the collar was a note. And in the note it said, and I'm paraphrasing, hello, my name is, I think, Lilo, the dog's name. My mom can't take care of me because she is homeless and has 2 children. She has done everything she possibly could, but I'm being given up. And I hope you will take care of me, the dog. Please don't abuse me. When the dog got to the rescue shelter, basically the people there cried. It was incredibly painful and heartbreaking to know this homeless person had to give up an animal companion, who she loved, because she couldn't afford to feed it. There were so many other things that needed to be done, she just could not do it any longer. So the people at the rescue center got into motion. They found out who the person was, because a friend of a friend of a friend was able to recognize who she was. They contacted her and said, we got the dog. We understand your circumstances. It is a hard time for people, and there are many homeless. What we will do, not only for your dog, but you, is do what we can to find you a home, to get your dog back to you, so that you also have some kind of income. We are here. We will help you. We will help you, and not judge you. And that was so powerfully important, not only for the dog's sake and the people at the rescue center, but for the woman and her two children who really loved the dog. And they have been reunited. They are in a place where eventually the dog will be able to go to, no pets allowed. So the rescue shelter is taking care of the dog up until the time when the dog can be returned and they're not charging for it. This is their type of wholeness, of compassion, to reaching out to someone they do not know because it is the right thing to do. So let's do a couple minutes of mindfulness meditation practice. I would invite us to consider the times when we've helped another person or other people, when we have been helped ourselves during a time of tragedy or hurt or pain. I would suggest to you that that is quenching our thirst for wholeness by reaching out, by taking in compassionate and caring voices, actions, and thoughts that make our lives or make the life of someone else we don't know a little bit better. And I would dare say that probably every one of us in this room have done such kindnesses or have had them done to us. And that is wholeness. So let's just take a couple minutes just to reflect on what people have done for us or what we have done for people or pets, animal companions, during the course of our lives. And consider the possibility that that is raising a sense of becoming whole. If you want to know the difference between Lee's religious community and other Unitarian Universalist congregations, it is other religious communities out there in the world believe that we are inherently sinful and broken. What we believe at our best is that we are inherently whole, and we give the tools to help people reach wholeness, and may that always be so.